Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cavallo. We're live here at the 2017 Plaintree International Conference on Patient-Centered Care. I have with me today Doreen Schaefer, RN, MSN, CCRN, Department of Surgery, nurse educator, member of the... Wow. You got a lot of stuff going
got
on.
Got a lot of stuff going on.
So, you know, I know you're at Johns Hopkins. I know you're a nurse educator.
Mm-hmm.
So Doreen's here to share with us a personal story. And as an educator myself, it's something I really appreciate. She's going to tell us a little bit about how you can educate and learn in the same minute. And I think that's a lesson that we all could learn from. So, Doreen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So before we get going, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I've been a nurse for, it seems like, about 110 years, but in reality it's 30. I started out in the ICU as a new graduate. I've moved on, and with my master's, I've taken a role as an educator in the Department of Surgery. And then about 5 years ago, I got involved with the Venous Thromboembolism Collaborative for Johns Hopkins. It's a group that really looks at impacting one of the number one patient safety issues, which is blood clots. Looking at impacting patients, their refusal rates. I kind of have my fingers in a lot of different pies, which is what keeps it interesting for me. I still work at the bedside in the ICU, just enough to keep me, I like to say, incompetent at times, but keeps me aware of what's going on. So I'm not just teaching, I'm actually still doing.
And I know that you brought today a personal story of a patient encounter. Could we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Okay. All right. So with this offering, we were charged with telling a personal story, so something designed to inspire and enlighten and inform. My hopes you find that at least a little of all of that in what I'm going to tell you about. So I talked a little bit about venous thromboembolism, and it's VTE, or blood clots. It's comprised of DVT, which is deep vein thrombosis, or PE, which is pulmonary embolus. It contributes to the deaths of 271 people a day. That's more than breast cancer, motor vehicle collisions, and AIDS combined. But there's not a lot of awareness of it. So we had a contract from the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, and the Johns Hopkins VT Collaborative developed education with patients for patients and that had refused their medications for prevention. So we partnered with those patients to understand what education would actually look for them, as opposed to us telling them what they should do. Some of the patients wanted paper forms, some wanted to learn from video, some wanted just a conversation. So we developed the paper using the input from our patients and from patients who actually had clots. We listened to patients when they said the video needs to be short, to the point, encompassing prevention, recognition, and treatment. And there would be, oh my gosh, a real person that would have a conversation with the patient. So we would do it just in time. So a patient would refuse their doses of anticoagulation that were prescribed to prevent the clots while they were in the hospital and at higher risk. So as lead educator on this project, I would get a text or a page to a beeper. And when anyone in our hospital had refused their medication, I'd visit the patient and reinforce any education that would actually been done. And I'd use our newly minted, you know, educational arsenal. I kind of thought of myself as an individual SWAT team. And as I was rushing to the patients, I'd hear that Mission Impossible, you know, soundtrack going through my mind. So over the years that I've worked with patient education, I've had many experiences like the one I had with Mr. C. So he's in his 60s, and he has a debilitating illness. He's worked hard all of his life, and just when he thought he could relax and enjoy it, he was diagnosed with a disease that altered those plans. So he's been in and out of the hospital on numerous occasions and has been intermittently compliant with the clot prophylaxis. Well, he'd been educated on the importance, he still refused at times. His previous education had mostly been someone telling him, this is important. If you don't take it, you could get a clot. And of many of the stories that I have that are similar, his story really highlights to me that success isn't always defined by your initial objective, you know, checking that box or the zeros and ones of data. Success is measured by engagement, empowerment, and by personal decisions that may or may not be the popular choice, but it's a choice nonetheless. So I was armed with all the tools that we developed with the patients and the VT Collaborative, and I felt really empowered to stamp out clots. As we say, you know, world peace, one clot at a time. So my first meeting with Mr. C was on a Sunday. I was trying to see patients on off shifts because blood clots actually don't work Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. So I got my daily pages and of patients who actually had refused their blood thinners, and his name and his floor popped up. So he was in his family lounge with his wife, and they were watching a John Wayne World War II movie playing in the background over his head. And I asked if I could talk to him. My kind of rote beginning is, I'm looking at how to keep you safe while you're in the hospital and safe from blood clots, to kind of segue in and lead into what I was going at. The concern I had was that he wasn't protected because his choice was to refuse his blood thinners. So he showed me the bruises on his arm and he put his hand over his stomach, and I knew there was a lot more underneath the Johnny gown that he had on. And he talked about the burning of the shots and about how he was frustrated and he felt like he was just hitting a wall at the time. So he took the paper education that we'd worked with the patients to actually craft, and he and his wife turned down the soundtrack to the John Wayne movie, and he looked at our video. And this was the video that we made based on what the patients told us that they wanted. Had some of the patients who had survived just barely at times, and they talked about their experience. Patients had also asked for information from their doctors and their nurses explaining the risks and the tests and the treatments. And the voices on that video really became the soundtrack for the movie that was going on the TV just above his head. It was the sands of Iwo Jima, and I knew that the Marines had raised the flag and they'd actually saved the day, but I also knew that John Wayne had died in that one. So they liked the education that I offered. It was different from what they'd previously gotten. His wife asked a few questions, and so did Mr. C, but the decision was ultimately his. Even though he had refused earlier, he said, I'll take the shots. It's like, yes, a win, a win. Then Monday or Tuesday, the beeper went off, and I flipped it open, and that familiar name showed up. He'd refused again. So I thought, really? You know, because it is all about me. You know, really? He refused again. I thought I had done a really good job. I broke my arm patting myself on the back with that one. I changed a refusal to an acceptance, but no, he refused again. So I trotted myself down the floor. I really didn't have that background Mission Impossible. It was more like a nan-nan-nan-nan, you know. So he was on ribavirin at the time, which is a really nasty drug. It's life-saving and dangerous all at the same time. So his room had to be bare. There couldn't be a lot in it. Things either had to be thrown out afterwards or wiped down or terminally cleaned or whatever you do to that. So it's naked and it's sterile, and it's isolation truly personified. I just didn't want it. I really just didn't want it. And I'm thinking, oh, it's important. You know, I thought we understood each other. He understood, and I'm not sure that I did at the time. So I wrote down the times on the board, because thinking that maybe if he understood what was coming and when it was coming, he could gear himself up and make it a little bit easier for him to say yes. I said, just a reminder. I said, look at it and think of me. I said, let me know what you need. But I think he already had. But he took the shots. So I came to the floor a couple of days later to see another patient, and I felt something right behind me. He'd snuck up behind me, and I turned around, and there he was in his isolation gown and his mask and, you know, that bright yellow that says, hey, you could catch something from me, you know? Don't stand too close to me. Somebody who can't breathe very well, but we slap that mask over the top of him, and it's like he's breathing through water, you know? It's like, you might, you know, I have to wear this, but you don't want to catch anything. So, we exchanged niceties at the time, and then he asked me about antibiotics, and I'm not sure if he just thought that I was the only one that was able to talk to him in depth or just had the time to talk to him. He said, why can't I get them all continuously? Just give me them all at once, and I can get out of here faster. So I used my diagram on antibiotics, my go-to, that, you know, I've got my subtherapeutic and my therapeutic and my kill zone, you know, diagram that's got a timeline and circles and arrows and everything. And I just nicely tagged onto that and segued into how heparin keeps them safe the same way. He's a visual guy, and he's a patient one. If it's explained and it's reasonable, he took the shots. So a little bit later, he came up on my beeper. He was a missed dose, but he was off the floor. But I stopped by anyway. I didn't know that he was in the hospital at that time. I stopped in, and he smirked at me, and he said, I was just going to refuse to see if you'd come. His wife is over in the corner, and she's just shaking her head. She's like, yep. I said, you need anything? He said, nah. And he took the shots. So at that time, too, a couple of days later, he got transferred to a higher level of care, and it looked like he'd had a stroke. So he just shook his head. He really had trouble word finding at that point in time, but he was firing on all cylinders. It wasn't a stroke. It was a new med that he was on. And he took the shots. He was admitted again, but I missed one somehow. I was on vacation. That time he talked to me about it. He said that time when he came in, he fired a couple of his doctors. They wouldn't listen to him. They told him, you need to understand. You know something? He does understand. They didn't. He wound up in the ICU. They didn't understand. He took the shots. Now this time around, his doctors listened. He listened. They got the fluid off, they got his blood pressure under control, and he didn't spiral like he did the last time. He knows, he's learned. He's still taking his heparin. In the world of VTE prevention, there's no bullying patients into taking their medication. A win is not every patient conforming without question, uncertain in their compliance. It's supporting patients to make the best decisions they can with the information provided. Now, we don't have the luxury or the resources to engage every patient on all aspects of their care. We are able to identify patients at risk for this number one. VTE is a number one safety issue. And we can offer them tools designed by patients to assist them in making what's the decision that's best for them. So I've learned you can educate and learn all in the same minute. Patient-centered care is so much more than telling somebody what's best, what the evidence says, what best practices are, and for who. And we carefully crafted to engage and educate is an extremely important tool in helping somebody to understand, but understanding is sometimes the easy part. Being comfortable with the choices made, maybe not so much. So key points that define success are alignment of healthcare providers and patient safety needs, delivering meaningful information, engaging and reinforcing as needed, and supporting those ultimate decisions. So his journey's continuing. He's on a downward slope. Sometimes it's nice and gentle. Sometimes not so much. But he has his own choices, his decisions, and his body. Good, bad, or indifferent, he owns them. And so he owns taking the shots. Nope.
Isn't she great, everybody? So let's talk a little bit about him, because unfortunately, I'm a lot like him in many ways.
Many people are.
And you know, so there were some things you had to overcome there, right? Mm-hmm. You had the traditional education, you had multi-modes of education mm-hmm. that you could deliver. What was it that finally broke through with this, with Mr. C? I'm also a Mr. C.
Ah.
I wasn't that guy, but mm-hmm. What was it that finally broke through?
I think it was a combination of everything. A lot of the education that we've developed is developed by patients. So I wasn't coming at him with a provider view. You need to take this. You need to do this. These were patients that were telling our other patients that we show this information to, that I was in your place. I got a clot. One of our patients in our video says, I didn't wear the squeezy boots. I developed a clot.
Oh.
And they literally look at the camera and say, you know, please take your shots. Please put your squeezy boots on. I've lived this. I know what you have potential to go through, and I want to help you.
Well, what kind of advice would you give to the person at home that's, you know, maybe afraid to come seek treatment, maybe they're coming to having some of these symptoms and doesn't know how serious a DVT might be?
Well, ultimately is to say that we don't know definitely that it's a DVT until they come in and are seen. There could be other things that are causing some of the same symptoms, but ultimately, if they're having symptoms, leaving it go makes things worse. Clots can break off. They can travel to their lungs. They can travel to their brains. Some people say, well, maybe if I just go quick. But you may not just go quick. It's something that could cause significant damage and alter your lifestyle, alter, you know, make an independent person someone who now has to rely on someone. Post-thrombotic syndrome can cause significant pain, non-healing wounds. It costs healthcare industry upwards in the $1 billion a year to treat. So prevention, again, is always key to this.
We're talking to Doreen Schaefer, RN, MSN, CCRN, Department of Surgery Nurse Educator at Johns Hopkins Hospital. As we start to get to a close here, do you have any closing thoughts that you want to share with our audience, whether they're on the nursing side or the patient side?
I think engagement is the key. Listening on both sides, something that I've noticed has been emphasized throughout this conference, is not just talking, but listening. Engaging, quality information given to the patients, quality information given from the patients to the provider, working as a team to keep patients safe.
That's awesome. That's great advice. And we want to thank Doreen for joining us today. I'm going to pause. I'm going to edit that stuff out. before we end it, is there anything else that you weren't canned at all, by the way?
No? Okay.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. My name is Matt Cavallo. I'm the host of the Patient Activation Network podcast. We want to thank Doreen Schaefer, nurse educator for Johns Hopkins. Doreen, thank you.
Thank you.
We look forward to bringing you another educational and inspirational story soon.